In the fourth and fifth chapter we studied last 2 weeks. Now, Micah starts off in the first chapter by telling of these villages and what's going to happen to them. In the second chapter, he presents the wickedness of the people at that time, how that they're really cannibalistic. They just act like a bunch of cannibals as they devour one another. Third chapter, he deals also with the priests and the prophets and their rulers. Then the concludes that God will plow Jerusalem or Zion as a field. Now God didn't do it at that time. He did it later under the Babylonians. He deals with that later. But in the fourth and fifth chapters, two great messianic prophecies. He points out what will come to pass in the latter days. The mountain of Jehovah's house will be established on the top of the mountains, exalted above the hills, and all nations, all Gentiles, all people will flow unto it. They flow unto that kingdom there. That's the spiritual kingdom. He tells also that there'll be a restoration of the house of the former dominion. Now the former dominion was the rule of David. That would come into disrepute while they were in the captivity. Then he pauses there and deals with the present. But now they'll be carried away into Babylon. Now, at that time, they were threatened by the Assyrians. But both Isaiah and Micah told it would not be the Assyrians. It would be the Babylonians that would carry them into captivity. There they would be in travail, but God would bring them back. Then he assumes the messianic part of this in the second verse of the fifth chapter, where he now comes to the ruler himself. The ruler will be one who's going forth off from of old, from everlasting. He'll be born in Bethlehem, Ephrathah. Bethlehem means house of bread. Ephrathah means fruitfulness. So in the house of bread or fruitfulness, where he would be born. Then it describes him. He will stand before the flock and feed them in the strength of Jehovah. Then he turns to the citizens themselves, the citizens. He said they will be as dew and as refreshing showers in the midst of the peoples, the nations. But he said not only that, but the remnant also would be as a lion in their midst. Now the two thoughts there are the two thoughts. First, there'll be a refreshing influence in the world in which they are. That's a function of God's kingdom. But they will be strong enough in the power and strength of the Lord to overcome all of their enemies. They'll tear them apart as a lion, not literally, but in a spiritual sense, they will overcome them as a lion overcomes the foe. This is the point there. Very wonderful thought there. Well, that's where we were last time, down to that in the latter part of the fifth chapter. We stopped at verse 9. But then he said, let thy hand be lifted up above thine adversaries, let all thine enemies be cut off. That's the enemies and the people of God. That they are able to do that in the strength of the Lord. And they did that. The New Testament church overcame all the forces of that day, and we still can do that. That power. Now, he turns to the nation itself, and it shall come to pass in that day. Always observe that expression, in that day. What day is that? That's the day he's been talking about, the day of this ruler who shall come forth out of Bethlehem Ephrathah, who's going forth off of old, from everlasting. Now, in the day of his rule. So we're talking again about the messianic period of the messianic rule. Now notice here, it's come to pass in that day, said Jehovah, thou wilt cut off thy horses out of the midst of thee, and will destroy thy chariots, and I will cut off the cities of thy land, and will throw down all thy strongholds. That will be in the day of Christ's rule. All the things in which the kingdom had formerly trusted will be cut off. God will cut off the horses and all that. Now you have the same idea over just a little later in Zechariah. Zechariah says here that he's going to cut them off in the ninth chapter, verses 9 and 10. Notice that. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, even upon a colt, the foal of an ass. And that's quoted in John and Matthew and applied to Christ in his triumphal entry into the city. Now notice further. Now he said in verse 10, and I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the nations, and his dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. So here in both of these passages, God's going to cut off carnal warfare. Now I have that in Isaiah 2 and Micah also. They'll beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. The new kingdom will not be established by the sword. I've said this many times. It will not be extended by the sword. It will not be defended by the sword. That'll all be cut off. All right? So therefore, when you go back and read the history of the Middle Ages, when you had all those knights from different parts of Europe coming to try to destroy the Muslim and drive them out of Jerusalem there, they thought they were doing that in defending and promoting Christianity. But they weren't. That was not a movement from God. God will cut that off. You're not going to do that. What? Now notice further. He said, I'll cut that off. And I'll cut off the cities, and I will throw down all thy strongholds. And I will cut off witchcrafts out of thy hand. And thou shalt have no more soothsayers. Soothsayers are what they call cloud gatherers or storm cloud gatherers or something of that nature. But all of these that appeal to the occult, all of that will be cut off in God's kingdom. And I notice this next one too. And he says here, I will cut off thy graven images and thy pillars out of the midst of thee, and thou shalt no more worship the work of thy hands. Well, Roman Catholicism has all of those images. Now, they say they don't worship the image. They worship that which is back of the image. That's all on earth an idol ever was. All people ever worshiped was that which it represented. They knew that piece of stone had no power. They knew a carved wood had no power. But in worshiping that, they were worshiping the God that was back of it, that it represented. So I know that Roman Catholicism is not the church of the Lord, because in doing that, which God said, I'll cut off from the people there. The movement in the Middle Ages was not of God, because by military power they were going to drive out the Muslims and restore Christianity. You don't do it that way. Catholicism is not the kingdom of God. Because they have the images, they have all of that, and really it's almost an occult thing. They got all the superstitious things about it. That's not the religion of God. So it's simply a spiritual kingdom expressed in a spiritual way, and it's protected by a spiritual power. The whole thing is a spiritual concept, and that's awful hard for people to see. Hard for us to see sometimes. We begin to get the idea we'll build a fine building and all that, and the Lord will be pleased with it. No, the building doesn't make any difference. Whether we're meeting out here in a cotton shed, or meeting out here under a cow shed, or meeting out here under a tent, or under a tree, make any difference with God. We build us a meeting house for our own comfort. Because God's not honored by it any more than if you had just a shack. It doesn't matter there. Unless it represents your concept of God, unless that's your attitude toward Him. One of indifference, that would be different. Right? So notice now he said, no more soothsayers, graven images, pillars in the midst of thee. Thou shalt no more worship the work of thy hands, your own power, what you do. And I will pluck up thine Asherim out of the midst of thee, and I will destroy thy cities. All of those things in which the Jews expressed their pride, God would destroy these. He's going to remove everything of old Judaism so there'll be nothing left of it to appeal to individuals except the Old Testament that they want you to go back to there, a material concept of religion. But God's removed the physical, the material of that. The temple was destroyed, never been rebuilt, all of that. Right? Now, furthermore, I will execute vengeance in anger and wrath upon the nations which hearken not. Right? So, the nations that do not hearken unto Christ or respect Christ, our own nation, God says, what will I do there? I will execute vengeance in anger upon them. Right? Our nation has practically excluded God from its thinking. There's still some folks here that believe in God. I know that. The nation, our political rulers up there in Washington and other places, God is not considered in this. It's always what they're going to do militaristically and all that. So when you leave God out and how the laws that they're making passing, I think it's a tragedy and a travesty on people's thinking. When here you've got an election in a nation with all the problems that confront this nation, so many of them, yet what are the two things they're arguing? Homosexuality and abortion. Yeah. Homosexuality and abortion are the two great issues before our politician this year. When here's a great debt that can't be paid, here's the moral condition, here's drugs, here's all these things, they're more or less side issues. What do you hear them talking about when they're talking about the politics? What's his attitude toward abortion? Will he hire homosexuals or not hire homosexuals? God said, take the homosexuals out and stone them to death. That was God's law in the Old Covenant. And murder always brought about the death penalty in the Old Covenant. But not so much. So God says, now then I render vengeance on the nations that hearken not. Hearken not to what? Hearken not to God's rule and to the Christ. You don't have to obey the gospel we think about. There has to be a respect for the moral standard that God has established from the very beginning. That's what has to be respected. So I keep harping on this. I want you to be ready for it. When the vengeance is expressed and poured out on this nation, I want your faith to sustain you at that time if you live long enough. I think most of you will live long enough for that to happen. So what I'm saying is I want your faith in God to sustain you. That's the source of all of our strength. And not your military, not your finances, not your who's ruling politically, whether it's one of the three men that are running, unless his attitude changes toward morality, and that becomes a principle of government, then no matter which one it is, you're going to go down. It's just the Bible teaches it over and over and over, doesn't it? I don't teach a book but what that comes in some way into it. All right, so that's what he's saying. All right, so that's the messianic period. Now, I move back now to the present, to that condition at that time. Now, hear ye now what Jehovah said. Arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let by the hills hear thy voice. Now, the mountains and the hills here are personified. They were always been there. They've heard the controversy. They've seen the controversy between God and the people all down through the years. So let the hills serve as witnesses to this thing. But now, this controversy is a lawsuit. God is saying, I'm calling you to a court, a case before the court, a law court. Now, you're putting you on trial, and I'm going to stand on trial too. Now, notice here. Hear, O ye mountains, Jehovah's controversy, and you enduring foundations of the earth, for Jehovah hath a controversy with his people, and he will contend with Israel. I have a lawsuit with them. I'm going to bring them before you mountains who have heard my oaths back out of what I would do. You've been there all the time. You can testify to the oaths that I made back in Deuteronomy and Leviticus when I brought them into the land, what I would do to them. Now that you then witness to what happened. They're calling the people now to a case of law. Right? Oh, my people. Now here's his question. What have I done unto thee? And wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. Right? Now what have I done to cause you to turn from me to idolatry, to wickedness, to what the way you've been living, the things that you've been doing that I've talked about here? What have I done to cause you to turn from me? Not a thing but good. For all God ever does is good. My word does good to them who hear it. Right now, for the second question. For I brought you the up out of, here's what I've done for you. Number one, I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed thee out of the house of bondage, and I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Now what did I, three things I've done for you. I brought you up out of Egypt, I redeemed you, and I gave you Moses the lawgiver, Aaron the priest, and Miriam the prophetess. I gave you a prophetess, I gave you a pre-high priest, I gave you a lawgiver. And I've given you all that now. Now furthermore, O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, devised, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him. Remember that. When you came back to the borders of Moab, and King Balak sent over to Mesopotamia, and brought to Balaam over here to curse you, what did he do? God turned every one of his curses to a blessing. Every time he got up there to build an altar and put a sacrifice, he got up there, instead of cursing him, he blessed him. And then the king said, wait a minute, yeah, I brought you here to curse him. Well, then let's try another place over on this hill. We're going to build another altar. Same thing, I think there were five or six or seven times there. Every time he tried to curse the people, God put a blessing in his mouth. And God said, remember that. Remember that. And he didn't have any power over you whatever back there. Now remember, from Shittim unto Gilgal, that you may know the righteous acts of Jehovah. What happened from that? The Shittim was the Valley of Palms there, from one of the last places that they stayed over there in before they crossed the Jordan. Gilgal over on this side of the Jordan. Right? Now, what did they do before? They defeated King Og and also of Bashan and the other one there, those two kings, and took their land, all the land on the east of the Jordan. Remember that. Now, when you crossed over, what did you do? Crossed over, you stayed at Gilgal there. And then that southern campaign, or the central campaign rather, you took everything. Then you went on down to the south and you conquered all of them. Then when you heard the Canaanites were going to take after you up yonder, you went up and whipped them. So now I gave you the land on the east of the Jordan. Excuse me. I gave you the land on the west of the Jordan, and when you came to the Jordan, what did I do? I caused the Jordan, it was a high river, high water at that time, but I caused the thing to bank up. Then you went across the Jordan on dry land, just as you came out of Egypt on dry land. So now remember what I've done for you. I brought you out of Egypt. I took you out of bondage. I gave you Moses the lawgiver. I gave you Aaron the priest and his children priesthood. I gave you the prophetess there to direct you. Then remember these things between Shittim and Gilgal there, how you conquered those two nations on the east side, came over, you had three campaigns on the west side, took all of that, then you came on down there and began to settle up the land there. Remember what I, what have you got against me? You're before the court now. You're before the mountains that have seen and heard all this all these years. They know what's happened all the way through now. And you testify against me. That's what God says here. Now remember all that. Wherewith, all right now. Now this seems to be a question. Here the people now, they seem to respond like this. Wherefore shall I come before thee, before Jehovah, and bow myself before the high God? They've so far forgotten their law that they don't know what to do. Now that what they've done, they've just forgotten the law. They've forgotten what was in there. They've forgotten David's statement. And David said, the sacrifice and offerings you would not. I'd offer them if you would, but the sacrifices of God are broken spirit, broken and a contrite heart, O God, that will not despise. Right? Now, they've forgotten that. They've forgotten Deuteronomy 10. I'll turn to that Deuteronomy in just a moment. But now notice here. I come, and now they say, what shall I do? Now my shepherd, shall I come before him with burnt offerings and calves a year old? Will Jehovah be pleased with thousands of rams, or with 10,000 of rivers of oil? They're thinking about quantity. They're thinking about how a big quantity. If you come before God with all this quantity, is that what he wants? Wants to bring everything? Wants to make that kind of sacrifice? No, that's not what he wants. Quantity is dead, it's quality. What it consists of. All right, now notice further. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for this, for the sin of my soul? Now, here's oil, rivers of oil, thousands of bullets. Or do you want the thing most precious to me at all, my child? You want me to give my son, my firstborn, for a sacrifice? Well, that would have been an abomination to God. God said all the time, that's an abomination to him. They've forgotten the law. They don't know what's in it. They don't know what to do. That's about a lot of our brethren today. I read a fellow sent me a clipping from the Abilene paper, one of the elders, one of the churches there. Took a group off with him now. They've introduced instrumental music. They've got the piano and the drums and all that sort of thing in there. And anybody to join them, they want them to take them in there. All that sort of thing. What have they forgotten? They've forgotten the law of God. And this fellow was an elder for years in one of the congregations. That shows how far Abilene had gone away from the faith in so many of the congregations there. Well, but that's happening so far over the country generally, so much of it today. People have forgotten. They were baptized back on it, but they never did learn, or if they learned, they forgot it. Forgotten the law of God. Well, now look further. And I said, what shall I give my oldest son for my soul, son of my soul? Now, notice here's God's answer. He has showed the old man what is good. And what doth Jehovah require of thee? But to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with thy God. That's what he wanted. Now turn to Deuteronomy 10. Now you find that laid down here in the law, which they had completely forgotten. No, I didn't even know it, if they ever knew it was there. 10th chapter there, beginning with verse 12. And now Israel, now this is in Deuteronomy, before when Moses repeated the law to them just before his death, back there at Sinai, or rather just before he went left, just after that. And now Israel, what doth Jehovah thy God require of thee? But to fear Jehovah thy God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve Jehovah thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of Jehovah, keep the commandments of Jehovah, and his statutes, which I command you this day, for thy good. So, all that God had taught them was for thy good, and that was Deuteronomy 10, 12 to 14 there. And so that's what Micah is referring to here. What does Jehovah require of thee? But to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with thy God. That's what he still wants. He wants faith. He wants people to do his will. And as Micah said earlier in the second chapter there, God asked a question there. Do not my words do good to him that walketh uprightly? God, I gave you this for your good. What Paul said, because of transgression, one thing is the law added because of transgression, to the seed should come, to keep them from going completely away from God. And so that's what he still required. What does he want today? He don't want a river of oil, and he doesn't want 1,000 boats, and he doesn't want $1 million, and he doesn't want $1 million building. What do you want? He wants the faith and the love and the honor and the respect of his children. That's what he wants. He wants us to remember him, put his will first, and to do his will. This is what he wants. But I think our people today are in many respects and in many parts of the country, they're doing what the Jew did back then. They're forgetting the law of God. My people, as Hosea said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have not done, you rejected me, I'll reject you, says God. That's what he'll do. And so there's still a lot of faithful people, but there are too many of them like this elder down in Abilene there. He didn't like the way things were going. He wanted more of the hip hurrah type of thing. And so now he's got it. Got his own church. The whole front page, a whole page in the paper there was devoted to him and what he was doing there. Now, he was standing up there, big picture with his Bible, smiling all over at it there. What's going to happen to get full God in judgment? I think God will wipe that smile off. I think he'll wipe that smile completely off. Because he's forgotten the law of his God. He thinks he's doing it. I'm sure the man thinks he's doing what God wants him to do, all that. Now, let me move on now. So walk humbly with thy God. Now the voice of Jehovah crieth unto the city, that's unto Jerusalem. Alright? And they could find no charge. The voice of Jehovah crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom will see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? What's the rod there? The rod of judgment. Now hear the rod. Now they don't have an answer to that. They can't find a thing against what God's done. He had done for them. Everything he said he would do, he has done. He's done that for us. We'll continue to. Are there yet treasures of wickedness? Now here's coming down to the people now. Are there yet treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked? And a scant measure that is abominable, that is the wealthy. We're getting wealthy by short selling the people. Well, the pound wasn't a pound, and the yard wasn't a yard. And so they've done all that. Well, Amos, you remember, dealt with that also. Amos dealt with that in Israel 100 years before Micah. Now this seems to be the question of let every man say. Now let every man ask himself this question. Shall I be pure with wicked balances and with a bag of deceitful weights? Now God isn't asking that question. God's putting that question there. Now let every man say that. Let every man ask the question. Can I be pleasing with God? Shall I be pure with wicked balances and with a bag of deceitful weights? No, I can't be pure. I can't be pure and be dishonest at the same time. Dishonesty, God condemns it all the way through. Right? For the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Notice he's kind of like Isaiah. He likes to speak in triplets. Three different things. The three things he asked here that he did before here. The rich men are full of violence, the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Well, if our news media is presenting even almost the truth, I don't ever expect to tell all of it, but in their representing the commercial business transaction of our country today, isn't that about what this is? Always selling, misrepresenting the thing that they're doing or being sold. And our government, and this use of funds there, and then the merchants there, loan companies there, loan sharks, well, how they've robbed them, and not just this fellow Phoenix, but all the rest of them. What they've done. I remember some used to advertise so high they never see the advertisements anymore. I don't know. But deceitful in their mouth. Therefore I also have smitten thee with a grievous wound. I have made thee desolate because of thy sins. This is God speaking. This is what he had done to them. But why? What brought it on? Sin did. Now, to hear his word and do it is always good for people. Yes, sir.
I don't think the Jews had changed anything in the New Testament. Read James the 4th chapter and verse 4 and 5. 5 and 6, I think.
All right, read it.
Indeed, the wages of laborers who moved on your field, which you kept by fraud, cried out, the city of believers has reached the years of the Lord of Sabbath. You have lived on the earth in deep pleasure and luxury. You have battened your heart in the day of the slaughter. You have condemned, you have murdered, you have judged. He does not exist.
That's right. Same thing over there in the New Testament. I was on a passage to use tonight in my sermon tonight, maybe this morning one. We use that. That's a good one. That's how they gain their wealth and how they misuse the wealth. I said the same thing in that day, had the same thing back yonder, you got the same thing today. So human nature doesn't change, does it? No, not at all. Human nature doesn't change. You change the character of an individual by truth, and that's all. So that's a good one to bring in, Ray. That's a good one. You have to be desolate there and all that. That's what you've done. Now, thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied. Now, here's what's going to come to you. God said, I've smitten you with a grievous wound. I've made you desolate because of your sin. Sin is the cause of it. Sin is the ultimate ground of all of our misfortune. I've said for a good many years, I tried to study this matter of suffering back God years ago. I have been studying it for many years. I came to conclude, I had books off of seven different grounds for several reasons why men suffer. five reasons why. I come to conclude there's one reason. Violation of law. Man suffers spiritually because he violates spiritual law. He suffers physically because he violates physical law. He may not know when he violated. He may not know the law he violated. That's consequence. It's always the consequence of the violation of law. I don't believe that any suffering, it doesn't go back to the violation of the law. Physical, spiritual, moral, I don't care what it is. Always goes back to somebody violated the law. I may not have. Somebody else may have. Somebody else may have put the pollution in the air, pollution in the water, pollution in the soil, pollution in the food. Anyway, I violated the law when I put it in my body. That's what I'm saying. And that's the point. Well, now here. Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied. That's on the people now, the nation. But not be satisfied. And thy humiliation shall be in the midst of thee, and thou shalt put away, but shall not save. And that which thou savest will I give up to the sword. So here, and so eventually, that which we have saved here will be taken by somebody else. I said, well, it'll be lost, it'll be gone. Well, I guess somebody said, well, we're just going to spend it then. No, put it in the right place, put it to the right use. That's the thing, that's the idea. All right, now he said, thou shalt sow, but shalt not reap. Thou shalt tread the olives, but shalt not anoint thee with oil. And the vintage, and the grapes, you tread the grapes, but shall not drink the wine, the wine of the vineyard. You're not doing it. So all this that you laid up for, as we'll come to Habakkuk in a few weeks, we'll be talking about it from him. Habakkuk says here that that which they have stored up for fire, and the fire of destruction, will come a little bit later. All right. For the statutes of Omri are kept. Now Omri was that strong king of Israel, the father of Ahab, who married Jezebel, the daughter of the king of Tyre, and she was a Canaanite and a Canaanite worshiper. So they brought in the old Baal worship. Now, as I pointed out in the two books of Amos and Hosea, that the northern tribes had two systems of false religion. They had the calf worship, which was the worship of Jehovah falsely, false worship through idols, like Roman Catholicism. They're worshiping God, but worshiping God through the idol there. All right, calling on God through these statues there, what they represent. So that religion was parallel to Roman Catholicism. Then there was rank paganism, Baal worship, which is outright paganism, which is the equivalent to our worship today of materialism and those things. Right? So they had the two systems there. And here he says here for this, and so now that you've kept the statutes of Omri, are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab. Ahab, you remember, married, and his daughter, Athaliah, married one of the kings of Judah. One of the kings of Judah married her, rather. And that brought on a lot of wickedness down in Judah, you see. Here was a religious apostasy is the basis of our condition, folks. That's the basis of our condition in this country. What's the basis of our condition? It's apostasy from God. A complete rejection of God on the part of the people here, and are trying to run the thing apart from God, and it never works. Never has, it never will. And that's what I want us to see. I want you to help learn, I want you to learn that so you can help others to see it. You talk to people, you help them to see it. Now, and ye walk in their counsel. That's it. You see, you walk in the counsel of Omri and Ahab of Israel, who introduced wickedness up there, false worship, that I may make thee a desolation, and the inhabitants thereof a hissing, and you shall bear and the reproach of my people. All right? So, now, the thing is here, the desolation and hissing, you shall bear all of this. And so here is we will move on into the next chapter. I probably won't finish it, but I'll go as far as I can. Do we have any question over this now? You might have a question over this. All right. I hope you'll study this. I hope you get the point of it. I hope you'll see it. It's the kind of preaching and teaching that we need today so sorely. Not only do the people of the world need it, but our own people need to understand what's happening and who's in control of the whole thing. Not Mr. Perot and not Mr. Bush and not Mr. Clinton or whatever his name is. Maybe one of the Clinton gang over here at Tombstone, I don't know. But anyhow, it's not going to be in their hands. Not in the hands of Congress. I think it's in their hands to destroy, but it's not in their hands to save, because only God can do that. Any other question? Well, let me move on. Boy, woe is me. I think the prophet now is speaking for the people. He's personifying the people in himself. Now, he's speaking for the nation. The prophet here speaks for the whole Jerusalem Zion. Woe is me, for I am as when they have gathered the summer fruits, as the great gleanings of the vintage. There is no cluster to eat. My soul desireth the first ripe fig. That is, in other words, they are spiritually bankrupt. They're spiritually in poverty. Nothing there is worthwhile. So, he warns me for that. The godly man is perished out of the earth, and there is none upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net. Now, there was a small remnant left, yes. This is simply expressing the general majority, the great group of them. Well, what about this country? Did you drug traffic in this country? Terrible thing. And what it's doing to the people up there, those individuals getting rich off of it, they're doing it for that. And you say, well, we're trying to do something. No, you can take, that's murder. You provide a fellow with dope, you're murdering him. Murders ought to be put to death. Every one of those fellows, and when he's caught, instead of putting him in jail, slapping his wrist and putting him in an air-conditioned cell, put him before a firing squad where people can see it, and the next one the same way. How long would it take to cure it? We wouldn't have to kill them all to cure it. First thing you know, about a few of them there, and the rest of them would get the point, wouldn't it? Then they get the point. All right, so he's saying they wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net. Every fellow today, it looks like everybody trying to read it, grasping it, take what the other fellow has there. Now, that's not universal, no. A lot of good people in this country. I'm amazed when I read some of the things that occasionally get into the papers or get into the news media, the television, that how many good people there are. Wouldn't Ruby here, we've been out shopping a few times together. You come back and we're waiting to tell me how nice some of these young girls are and the clerks there and all that. You don't hear anything about them. All you hear about are those rowdies and destroying things. But there's still some good people. Now, when they're gone, the salt is gone. That's what I'm saying, don't you see? Well, that's the way it was back here. That doesn't mean everybody was doing that. That's the general movement, the spirit of the land at that time. And it was almost universal. Now, know their hands are upon that which is evil to do it diligently. The prince asketh, and the judge is ready for reward. And the great man, he uttereth the evil desire of his soul. Thus they weave it together. Now, notice here, his groups here. The first of all is the prince. The prince asketh, and second, the judge. And now here is the great man. That's the man of influence and power. They plan, and they all weave it together. They weave this thing together, this net. Well, who's weaving it together today? Here are your politicians and your rich fellows, your politicians, your judges, and all that. They're weaving this thing together to bring about destruction. And it's destroying our nation. Well, think about it. The best of them is as a briar. The most upright is worse than a thorn hedge. The day of thy watchman, even thy visitation is come, now shall be thy perplexity. All right, now they're like a thorn or a briar. What does a thorn or a briar produce? Jesus said, you don't gather figs or thorns, do you? Or grapes or thistle, you don't do that. No, these thorns, they don't produce anything good. What do these fellows today produce that's really good? All these great politicians and crooked guys. There's another group that I'm kind of getting down on, and that's your so-called comedians. These fellows where they get up there, they're so funny, but what do really they produce that's worth a dime? I don't listen to them long enough to find out, and maybe those of you who listen have to tell them what good you got out of it. But to me, if they take anything that's sacred and make joke out of that thing that's safety just to get a laugh. What good do they produce? Johnny Carson, idol of this country. But what good really ever came of Johnny Carson's program? Well, he got a good laugh out of it, maybe, but at the price of what? Too often it was the price of that which was sacred. That was his good. That was his honorable. Not every time. He had a few good ones. But I'm not talking about gender speaking now. I want you to think about our society. What condition we're really in here. Well, let me hasten on. Maybe you don't like this kind of study, but it's needed anyhow. That's what we need. The great men, weave it together. Best of them is a brow, a thorn. And I said, the devil, a watchman. Who is the watchman? God said to Ezekiel, son of man, I set thee a watchman of the house of Israel. Hear the word at my mouth and give them warning from me. Right? So the watchmen were those that are appointed of God to warn the people of what was taking place there, don't you see? Well, that's what gospel preachers ought to be doing today, instead of entertaining, too so much of preaching is just entertainment, instead of entertaining the people for 30, 40 minutes, we ought to all be preaching the things that people need to the people that need it, and I'm not doing that, I'm just preaching it to a few folks who really don't need it, unless you want to accept the learning. All right, the watchman, even thy visitation has come, that is that which God has said. Now shall be thy perplexity. They won't be perplexed. They won't know what to do. Which way shall we turn? Trust ye not in a neighbor now know. Look, the condition is now such that, I'll try to get this verse. Trust ye not in a neighbor. Put ye no confidence in a friend. Keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lieth in thy bosom. That is your wife. Don't even tell your wife these things. Because you can't trust anybody. You can't trust your wife. You can't trust your friends. You can't trust your neighbor. Times are bad. I'm not like that now yet in this country. Not like that yet at all. You still trust a few people. I don't trust very many people. Do you? When you go in to buy something, do you really trust the fellow that you're buying from, or the fixes you, repairs your radio or television? Do you really trust him or your automobile? I've got to the point. It's hard for me to trust him anymore. I get stuck too many times. Ripped off too many times. But you've got to live in a world where we can trust one another and get to where you can't. Why, it's bad then. Let me finish this up. For the son dishonoreth the father, the daughter riseth up against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, a man's enemies are the men of his own house. Jesus quoted that in the New Testament. Here he says here, of his own house. So here, reach the point that you can't trust even your own household. Look at the rebellion of youth today against the parents. And the parents seem to be rebellious against God, and then the children are rebellious against them. So the whole thing is a system of rebellion against all constituted authority. We don't want it. Now there's all of this, all you hear is homosexual and abortion. That's about all they're talking about now. That's the main issue politically. How do you stand on this? I'd like to know how you stand on what's right. There's a right in that. I'd like to know that, but I'd like for him to get back of it and say why he stands against it. I stand against both, because both are contrary to God and God's own will and what's right. That's why you stand against it. And they don't say that. Popular to come out and just say, one of the candidates, I think, is against it. The other two are strongly for it. Where do we go from here? Well, think about it. These lessons, I hope, will stimulate your thinking and your observation. Maybe as you watch the news on television or watch the television program, maybe you can look at them with a little different perspective after having studied these prophets. I believe you can. Okay, I guess I have time. Gordon gave me a watch this last week. I took it as a hint, and so I wore it this morning. He thought I needed a watch, so he gave me this one. I looked at it this morning two or three times. I really changed as I met there, so I'll follow this one. It says, time to quit, real quick. I like those kind of hints they go, and everybody finds. All right. You're excused.